from beyond the platform came the shouting of the hunters in the swimming pool. On the end of the platform, Piggy was lying flat, looking down into the brilliant water. "People don't help much." He wanted to explain how people were never quite what you thought they were. "Simon, well, he helps." He pointed at the shelters. "All the rest rushed off. He's done as much as I have, only Simon's always about." Ralph started back to the shelters with Jack by his side. "Do a bit for you," muttered Jack, "before I have a bathe. Don't bother." But when they reached the shelters, Simon was not to be seen. Ralph put his head in the hole, withdrew it, and turned to Jack. "He's buzzed off." "Got fed up," said Jack, "and gone for a bathe." Ralph frowned. "He's queer. He's funny." Jack nodded, as much for the sake of agreeing as anything, and by tacit consent they left the shelter and went towards the bathing pool. "Then," said Jack, "when I've had a bathe and something to eat, I'll just trek over to the other side of the mountain and see if I can see any traces. Coming?" "But the sun's nearly set. I might have time." They walked along, two continents of experience and feeling, unable to communicate. "If I could only get a pig. I'll come back and go on with the shelter." They looked at each other, baffled in love and hate. All the warm, salt water of the bathing pool and the shouting and splashing and laughing were only just sufficient to bring them together again. Simon, whom they expected to find there, was not in the bathing pool. When the other two had trotted down the beach to look back at the mountain, he had followed them for a few yards and then stopped. He had stood frowning down at a pile of sand on the beach where somebody had been trying to build a little house or hut. Then he turned his back on this and walked into the forest with an air of purpose. He was a small, skinny boy, his chin pointed and his eyes so bright they had deceived Ralph into thinking him delightfully gay and wicked. The coarse mop of black hair was long and swung down, almost concealing a low, broad forehead. He wore the remains of shorts and his feet were bare like Jack's. Always darkish in colour, Simon was burned by the sun to a deep tan that glistened with sweat. He picked his way up the scar, past the great rock where Ralph had climbed on the first morning, then turned off to his right among the trees. He walked with an accustomed tread through the acres of fruit trees, where the least energetic could find an easy, if unsatisfying, meal. Flower and fruit grew together on the same tree, and everywhere was the scent of ripeness and the booming of a million bees at pasture. Here the Littlans, who had run after him, caught up with him. They talked, cried out unintelligibly, lugged him towards the trees. Then, amid the roar of bees in the afternoon sunlight, Simon found for them the fruit they could not reach, pulled off the choicest from up in the foliage, passed them back down to the endless, outstretched hands. When he had satisfied them, he paused and looked round. The Littlans watched him inscrutably over double handfuls of ripe fruit. Simon turned away from them and went where the just perceptible path led him. Soon high jungle closed in. Tall trunks bore unexpected pale flowers all the way up to the dark canopy where life went on clamorously. The air here was dark, too, and the creepers dropped their ropes like the rigging of foundered ships. His feet left prints in the soft soil, and the creepers shivered throughout their lengths when he bumped them. He came at last to a place where more sunshine fell. Since they had not so far to go for light, the creepers had woven a great mat that hung at the side of an open space in the jungle. For here a patch of rock came close to the surface and would not allow more than little plants and ferns to grow. The whole space was walled with dark aromatic bushes and was a bowl of heat and light. A great tree, fallen across one corner, leaned against the trees that still stood, and a rapid climber flaunted red and yellow sprays right to the top. Simon paused. He looked over his shoulder as Jack had done at the close ways behind him, and glanced swiftly round to confirm that he was utterly alone. For a moment his movements were almost furtive. Then he bent down and wormed his way into the centre of the mat. The creepers and the bushes were so close that he left his sweat on them, and they pulled together behind him. When he was secure in the middle, he was in a little cabin screened off from the open space by a few leaves. He squatted down, parted the leaves, and looked out into the clearing. Nothing moved but a pair of gaudy butterflies that danced round each other in the hot air. Holding his breath, he cocked a critical ear at the sounds of the island. Evening was advancing towards the island. The sounds of the bright, fantastic birds, the bee sounds, even the crying of the gulls that were returning to their roosts among the square rocks, were fainter. The deep sea, breaking miles away on the reef, made an undertone less perceptible than the susurration of the blood. Simon dropped the screen of leaves back into place. The slope of the bars of honey-coloured sunlight decreased. They slid up the bushes, passed over the green candle-like buds, moved up towards the canopy, and darkness thickened under the trees. With the fading of the light, the riotous colours died and the heat and urgency cooled away. The candle buds stirred, their green sepals drew back a little, and the white tips of the flowers rose delicately to meet the open air. Now the sunlight had lifted clear of the open space and withdrawn from the sky. Darkness poured out, submerging the ways between the trees till they were dim and strange as the bottom of the sea. The candle buds opened their wide white flowers, glimmering under the light that pricked down from the first stars. Their scent spilled out into the air and took possession of the island.